Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the You Don't Look Like an Engineer podcast.
And today we are thanking Josh Yates for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much, Josh. We're so excited to have you and ask you a lot of questions. But to start, would you like to introduce yourself for our audience and tell us a little bit about your background and where you're from?
Yeah, no problems at all. Firstly, obviously, thank you for having me. I'm a long-time listener, big fan. So this is a bit of a fangirl moment for me. So I appreciate the invite. My background is born and bred here in southeast Queensland. So I've lived here for all my life. Done a couple of stints overseas through work or through sport, but generally been around southeast Queensland from Brisbane, Logan and the Gold Coast. Settled down here now, just down in the beautiful part of southern Gold Coast here, just near the border. Bought a house here a few years ago, about 8 years ago now, and have a little family, which is probably the pride and joy of everything I do. So, two kids and a wife, and just very grateful to be, I guess, living in this beautiful country, but this particular part of the world. But then also now, the way things have worked out in terms of my professional career, able to actually work down here is most of my time. So, which is great.
That's pretty incredible that, you know, a lot of the people we speak to, they tend to be able to look back at a few key people or key events growing up that kind of led them to where they are at the moment, career-wise or otherwise, like just in life in general. What do you think would be, like, in your early years, what influenced you to end up down the path you did?
Yeah, so mine, and this is what appeals to me about even simply the title of, of this podcast. So, you know, you don't look like an engineer because, I'm not an engineer, and managed to, whether by fluke or a bit of hard work as well, I've been in the industry over 20 years now of construction and engineering. Probably my earliest, I guess, because my background, you know, sort of jumping around a bit, but I did at university, I did a business commerce degree, mainly because I deep down wanted to be a professional footballer when I was a lot younger. Unfortunately, you actually needed talent to do that, so I needed to fall back on something. So I wasn't too sure towards the end of my schooling. So I ended up doing a university degree, which was quite broad. But if you sort of know my personality as well, I'm probably quite, I guess I've got both my parents, both dad and mum, different sort of, influences from them. But dad was always in that, business type leadership roles from anywhere from CEO to business development, general manager roles. So I guess I was exposed to that very early because on holidays, I didn't grow up living up with my dad, but was in my life. But so when we did, holiday adventures where other kids were probably out doing other things, dad actually used to take me on quite long road trips for work. And when he had to go see clients, because that was probably the only opportunity we could spend a bit of time. So realistically, I was exposed to business development, marketing, strategy, general manager type roles from the age of young as 5 or 6 from school holidays. So, and dad actually was quite an inspiration, the fact that he actually went to university later in life. So he was doing a few other things and then went, I want to have a better life, and then ended up going into this sort of business commerce, accounting type, further education, and then from there worked his way up, which is a pretty incredible story from almost starting again in a particular career from the bottom, and actually ended up being the CEO of a couple of different companies, or general manager type roles, so which is pretty exciting. So yeah, that's would be my earlier. Plus, I love to talk. If this podcast is probably going to go for 3 hours, so you may have to cut it. But Lau's starting to get to know me, so I just love being around people. So I try and do what your passion is, and and then try and do that in your everyday life. Because let's face it, we most of our time spent on this earth is working, unless we manage to win the lotto. So you know, you might as well enjoy it. And I can honestly say, I jump out of bed every day and love what I do.
Oh, that's so cool. I have decided to get to know you, and I think that something that caught my attention from like the first time was your ability to connect with people. And I think that now that you have given us a little bit of background about your journey, it sort of like makes sense. Like if you were present in an environment where people that, you know, had that ability to talk to others, or in a business sort of like environment, it makes sense. So that actually clarifies quite a few things. But I have a question for you, and is regarding relationships, because I think that that's just one of the differentiators of your approach in business. And I want to sort of like know, how is that you manage to connect with people that you just met on day one? Like, what's the secret of that?
Yeah, well, I think it's mainly just being, you know, quite transparent, but it's actually just being genuine. And I know a lot of people can throw that line out, but I think, Lau, you and I have spoken about it over the last couple of months, getting to know each other. But, you know, I come from a working class family as well. So I was actually raised by my mum and stepdad, and my stepdad was a tradie and ran his own business. So, you know, you could see the ups and downs of doing that. But I think where I started from day one was, you know, you treat the CEO the same as the janitor. And I've always believed in that. So regardless of your background or who you are or what you believe in or your title or how much money you earn, you know, for me that means nothing. At the end of the day, everyone deserves the equal amount of respect. And then I feel if you do that and be genuine from day one with those, I guess, that foundation in relationships, people, they give you the same respect in return. And generally, the ones that don't, you probably find as you go throughout your career, you sort of work in the circles that are quite similar to you, with you similar in your beliefs and how they engage. Without being too controversial, I guess being a non-engineer in this industry, I've probably struggled at times, but from day one, I guess, especially when I got into the engineering side of things originally, after leaving mining supply chain, when I came back from America, was I started with a geotechnical firm, and they probably had no idea what I did or brought in the first, you know, 6 months or so, and vice versa. But by the end of that relationship internally with you know, the technical people, and then me being a commercial overhead, if you will, we managed to build some really strong relationships once we respected what each other did, and how when we worked together, you know, we were stronger together and we got better results. So which was great, and by the end of it, it was really actually hard to leave that particular company to go to my new role. So because they felt like family. So at the start, you know, being from the Gold Coast and into sport and not really knowing anything about geotechnical engineering, which is very technical, that was a baptism of fire. But still got friends there today, and they've some moved on to other companies. But I absolutely love those relationships. But it did take a lot of hard work to build and respect what each brought to the table, and we were better together, both technically and commercially.
Mm. When you say struggle, because I think there's a lot of people who get into engineering and they constantly think that it's quite, you know, just technical and you're designing a lot of things. And we do like to clarify very often on the podcast that it's way more than mathematics and, you know, software and that sort of thing that you're learning. So there's a lot more than a technical aspect. So when you say you're struggling being from a non-engineering background, is that more just the perception of people about you in terms of your capability, because you don't have the technical background? Is it, or is it that you do recommend some amount of a technical understanding of what's going on.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, and I think you learn that. Like, any sort of business development, marketing or commercial role in that, generally we can move. Like, I've worked in finance, I've worked in supply chain, and now, you know, construction engineering. If you've got that base there in terms of what you're trying to do and deliver, that can actually be utilized across all industries. It's the technical part where you need to learn enough to, I guess, not be dangerous, but, you know, be able to ask the relevant questions to then go back to the right people. But I think what I did was break down. I would actually start bringing engineers with me to client meetings, to briefings, to tender, I guess, workshops, you know, originally, or even just purely through strategy meetings of how to get on the front foot and understand the client. So answer to your question, where did it struggle? Yes, I think they thought, well, what does this guy do? What is he actually bringing? He just talks a lot and goes for coffees, or he has a lot of lunches, you know what I mean? And luckily I got thick skin, and I love a bit of banter, and that's good fun and across anywhere. So I'm the youngest of four, and, you know, with older brothers, so you can't be sensitive in my household and or growing up. So yeah, I had to break that down, I had to build my relationship with them. So I remember the guy that hired me, who's since become a close friend and is now in London. So he was my direct manager. He said, mate, your biggest, even though you're in a business development role, your biggest, I guess, focus needs to be your internal relationships. I'm sort of thinking, what's he talking about? Because I'm here to bring in work and win projects. And you know, we're working on major projects, $1 billion or more, transport, right through mining or different type of opportunities. So I'm like, well, what do you mean? So, yeah, you had to build your brand internally, build the respect internally, because what a lot of the there's a lot that can be silos within businesses, or he doesn't need to know this because what does he bring, or has never delivered a job, or hasn't, you know, designed this. But a lot of that information is critical, because if we all generally know what each other's going on, like, you get little light bulbs there where you're having conversations with anyone where you go, well, hang on, no, we're delivering this over here. We can help you here. And we had all different disciplines, wasn't just geotech within the business. So it's about cross-selling and, you know, contam land and bringing through other groundwater, other opportunities as well, which was my role to optimize how much scope we picked up on a lot of these projects. So if I wasn't speaking to the technical guys where there was opportunities there, well, then how could I do that and vice versa? So yeah, it was definitely a learning curve. You had to prove yourself, but I think that came with time, and that just goes straight back to my initial. You got to be strong in terms of in the team and get the right outcomes. You need to understand what the others do. You need to respect that as well, and you need to work together. Otherwise, you're only as strong as your weakest link, right? And I can give you 15,000 sporting analogies, and I like bringing. I've only ever played team sports, so I love bringing that in. And a lot of engineers roll their eyes, but I think they know me now. Where, you know, my interest is how did we win this as a team? Because I guess probably closing out on that, one of the best project directors I ever worked for, who's a very, very good technical engineer as well, just said it's amazing what you can achieve when no one cares who gets the credit. So, you know, and I strongly believe that. So we're in this together, and yeah, so that was a good learning curve for me anyway, early on in engineering and construction.
I'm curious to know, you know, we know that women face imposter syndrome, and I think we have asked a couple of our guests here in the podcast about their experience. And since you were saying that at times you struggle with like credibility or trying to, you know, prove yourself and your capabilities, did you ever struggle with imposter syndrome yourself in these meetings and dealing with people knowing the technical world?
Yeah, like deep down, I wish I had a engineering background as long as I stay in this region, because yeah, I'm one of these people who love to learn, and I do want to know. I want to, you know, information or knowledge is key or is power. But then I've since learned with building the relationships and having those strong relationships internal, whoever you're working for or with, it's actually more enjoyable because they probably don't want to do what I do and get up in front of groups and kick off bids and manage that and manage all different personalities. They probably just want to stay in their lane, do their thing and so yeah, I definitely struggled with that for a while. Look, we still get different feedback now, even coming into my own business, and like, oh yeah, you guys on tenders or expression of interest, you're here to make it pretty. And like that really grinds my gears because we actually bring more than that than making a document look pretty. I think more so in a strategic sense and the relationships we build with designers. Like part of my role is to build teams. Like, you know, why do we want a team with ARIP? Why do we want a team with BG&E? Why are they best for project? Doing due diligence, I love all that, sort of putting that together. So that's actually technically mitigating risk and coming up with better solutions on the project because BG&E may be stronger on bridges than ARIP. Like, so that's why you're going with them or something like that. I'm only using you guys as an example, but you know what I mean? Or you go find a particular, trying to bring that in and not put you to sleep. But
cutting that part out.
Yeah. So yeah, cut that part out. Yeah.
I just thought it was hilarious. I love it. But we won't cut it. We'll put it back in.
But yeah, well, there goes my chance.
BG&E has a job for me when we're done.
There's my chance for ever working with ARIP. But no, look, it's honestly, I have that as
wait,
well. And
that's say why, that again.
No. But that's what I mean. And that's why I'm actually quite passionate about, you know, all sort of the in terms of that, you know, diversity piece. And I know, Lau, you and I've spoken about it. My career has gone down a different path in that social performance, social delivery, which is getting bigger and bigger, especially in government projects on all levels. So, because yeah, you might sit there and go, oh, well, you know, and I've seen the barriers of women in construction engineering as well, but just know it's not just you guys. It can be people that don't have technical experience. It can be people from different, countries. You know, there's a million different ways, or even who you are, or from different areas, or your beliefs. So, yeah, I think there's, you know, rather than trying to unpack that, because I don't have a silver bullet or an answer, but at least you know. Yeah, there is a bit of that in our industry that's quite prevalent still. So but that's all right. I've been around long enough now to push back. So,
you know, as a listener, I would be questioning, what does Josh do? Like, do you want to sort of like explain what your role is and how different it is from like the design delivery kind of thing?
Yep. So, yeah, I basically ask myself every day what I do. So, yeah, it's hard to explain. But, no, look, I'm one half of a business owner of Landy Advisory. So we actually have two businesses now, which is exciting. So there's a Landy Developments that started 3 months ago. But effectively what I do day to day, when you said in terms of purely just – so really if you unpack it at all, you can probably say it in one sentence. So we do project management. But in terms of project management, we both do pre-contract side, and people listening, pre-contracts is obviously anything before. So trying to win work, business development, strategy, you know, business plans. We do growth strategies. We've just recently helped a business that's not from here set up from scratch and now have an office, employed people, an engineering business in the Northern Rivers, which is exciting. So from that, we did their business plan, their project pipeline, all their client engagement strategy. So who's in the area, introductions, strategies there, got them on tenders, bids, EOIs, you name it. So I love that sort of that stuff. Because when you finish it, I actually sit there and go, I should probably do this for my own business. So rather than, you know, everyone else, but it's been a really, really awesome experience. And then that can then go into what we call in the project management delivery side. So that's probably my business partner. So his background is he is a civil engineer, but he's you know, he's been a project director. Like, he literally goes to the projects on major projects, but also smaller ones as well. And we have a team that actually goes into delivery, so works with the designers like yourselves, and go and build effectively what you've designed to do the construction phase. So That's a very high level, but given the fact that, yeah, I don't want to go over the 5 hour threshold of your podcast.
I like it.
And put people to sleep. But so we work from my world in pre-contracts land, some anywhere due diligence to business, as I said, business plans or, you know, development approvals, or like what I'm doing currently, working with Lau's company, where you're trying to build a presence in a particular region. So I'm helping you grow, diversify, to then right through handing over projects to where we'll physically go out and manage the build for you, both built form and, but mainly civil infrastructure. Does
That's
that help?
Good.
Is that a good
Absolutely.
Is that a good
It's a lot of context.
No, but congratulations on this second business. And it's before you get in, we get into more about, you know, building teams and leadership, because there's so much that's involved in that space. You touched a little bit about, you know, asking questions and making sure you develop an understanding, because, you know, you don't, like, we are as strong as our weakest link. So there's a lot of people starting out in this industry and they don't know a lot. And how would you recommend understanding what you don't know and being able to ask the right questions? Is there like a good starting point or a good way to think about things?
Yeah, no, that's an awesome question. Once again, I've been very fortunate to have some really good mentors in my life and in business. And fresh out of uni, I was in finance in the city, you know, thought I was killing it. Bought probably a suit that was way too expensive for me and couldn't afford food, still just to try and fake it till you make it, almost have the look. And I remember my boss coming in to me, very smart man, and this is in the finance game, and he's like, tell me, and then I was like a marketing coordinator, but I wanted to be those guys where they were, which was business development. Working, and they were, it's a massive company. It was actually General Electric, so they're huge worldwide. But anyway, he asked me the question. He goes, "Oh, explain to me what sales is." And, you know, I've come up with, I don't know, bringing in revenue, this, that, all sorts of questions, all sorts of responses. Anyway, he goes, "No, it's about asking the right questions and actually, you know, listening to your client when you're asking those right questions to come up with the right solution." But then also where I've evolved from there is not everyone's the same, right? What makes Lau tick, me tick, Sohn, how you're all different, especially what you see as value. And I think that's probably one of the strengths. It's taken experience, but I think learning that. So it's not, you can't just have one solution for everyone. Like, it's got to be bespoke, especially in that world in terms of in building the relationship. So yes, 100%, asking the right questions. And if you don't know the answer, say it. And then your biggest thing is go find the answer and come back with the right answer and the response as quick as possible. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people, not just in our industry, but along the way, that think they have to come up with that answer straight away, and it's wrong, or it can even sometimes be, you know, fabricated. You don't need to. I think if people actually appreciate more, you go, "Hey, look, I don't know the answer. I'll go find it," and you come back to them. So, So I got told from another mentor as well. It was very straight, and I don't know if you need to probably beat this out, but he just said, "Never bullshit a bullshitter." So, and I thought, no idea what he meant at the time, but I definitely understand that. So yeah, there's a few things there: asking the right questions, coming back to them as quick as you can, being straight up, you don't know the answer, and then you don't need to have that answer all the time, and so don't make it up.
Mm-hmm. Love that. I think you have become a bullshitter now then. Well, you did say, now I understand. Now you understand.
Well, it's only happened since I've been working with a certain company, but yeah, anyway. So.
Certain people at that company, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I've been influencers. So, yeah.
No, thank you so much for that, because I think it's just so important to understand when you're going through your career that there'll be constantly phases where you don't know much about anything. Whether it's, you know, when you start out technically, or then when you like venture off to trying to manage people, there's just constant learning curves. And knowing how to, you know, be in the meeting and say, look, I'm going to ask this question because I don't really know. It's like, it can be of so much value to everyone else around you as well. But I guess some people also get scared because the questions, the quality of questions you ask tells a lot about the quality of your understanding. So I think people just tend to feel a little bit like, if I ask this, then...
Absolutely.
I think, and that's a good point you raised too. Like I don't have an ego, and I generally want to hang out with people that don't have egos. So for me, whether it's a lowering, and it might help people in the room, but I have no issues asking what's perceived as the stupid question within reason, because I feel you learn. That's the only way you learn, right? Mm. So I can sometimes
even
pitch
within reason caveat. Yeah.
Well, as simple as how many acronyms do people use in our industry? So I'm sitting there, Jesus, and everyone's pretending they know what the acronym is, and I'm like, that's it, I don't care. And I can see the room ticking over around, and everyone's too scared to ask it. So I just ask it because and maybe that's a very high level basic one, but I'd rather learn and understand what it actually the meaning is, and then that's something that you can take with you, then sit back and just, hopefully gain that knowledge, but then it could be completely wrong and go down a different path. So I think I would say to anyone, even young people coming into the industry, and I've been fortunate enough to be on some really big tenders for major projects, and, where there's 140, predominantly are all our designers and a few other specialist subject matter experts, and the young engineers can be quite intimidated to sort of ask that question. So when I'm leading a team and a bid team, I'm not an engineer, right? So I don't know how you're going to design that bridge, or you're going to do rigid inclusions for geotech or pavement design or God knows what. So I can see that they might be strong. So I'll ask it, and I don't mind. Like, I don't care if others in the room or think, oh, I can't believe he asked that or whatever, but hopefully then I learned something, and then hopefully the others there that might be a little bit nervous too, but I reckon ask the question, don't be afraid. Easier said than done, but it's the only way you're going to learn.
Mm. And it's a habit built at the end of the day as well. Yeah, once you do it, like, you break the barrier and you just stop getting scared each time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So now I want to ask you. Oh, no, you go, Sohan. What did you?
Oh, no, you go. I feel like now we're on the same page.
No, maybe not. Just go. No.
Well, I wanted to jump because you talked about not having an ego and, treating the janitor and the CEO the same. So I wanted to get more into, what your thoughts on leadership were. But just firstly, even just being present to be able to lead. Like, I feel like when you're trying to treat people, equally or be genuine, sometimes it's just a matter of there's so much happening in our heads that we're just preoccupied, and then you go back later on and be like, oh, if I had just listened a bit more, or like asked another question, a little bit of regret, not major but tiny, but it's just because there's so much that you're currently like ticking off, and like you're like running to the next meeting and that sort of thing, and you're a CEO, so I'm sure there's like so much that you have to deal with on the daily. How do you be present in that moment to be able to speak with people genuinely?
Yeah, so both Dave and I, my business partner, reason why we set up Landy is because we did find, I think, just from our experiences and through all sorts of walks of life, I think communication can be quite a challenge, whether it's silos or people getting back to you or regardless. So I think from us, that was our foundation for stepping out, and then it sort of formed him and I as leaders. So we can see where there's lack of communication with your teams, or even and your clients and your partners, which is what we refer to our clients as, because we want to be integrated in their team and collaborate. Is we want to lead from the front in terms of communication, and more drilling down into that, we now looks like we'll go to a team of eight, which is we're pretty proud of in terms of 2 years of operation. That so we have eight people working at Land, including Dave and I, and our number one value is like our people first. And what I guess what we mean by that is, a lot of people write it in their values or mission statement or anything there, but we actually live by it. So no matter what, anyone from our team, in terms of sheer having access to us or us being proactive, you know, making sure that it's an environment that they enjoy coming to work, that both if it's a technical thing, they're challenged, they're enjoying that, but then also too, it's a culture where they can actually, you know, we really recognize great work. We love celebrating their wins, you know, more than ours. I can honestly say that's how Dave and I think. And we thought, well, let's go start a company and do that. And we look at other businesses, you know, we read books and other influences there, but you know when a company's got a really good culture, and we've got all our staff we know and or have worked with before. So you're never going to see Landy on Seek. We don't want to be massive and take over the world, but if you're the right person, we'll just find you a home. We'll create you a role because that means everything to us. And we're you know, knock on wood, we are so fortunate. And speaking completely transparent, I was nervous. If it was probably me, it would be not for the sheer fact that I don't want to work with people, but nervous wise, once you start bringing people on, you need to basically bring the work in, otherwise to put food on their table. It's not just you and your business partner anymore. So that's scary because you're responsible for others. But you know, Dave, we're yin and yang. He's 100 miles an hour head first. I'm dot your I's, cross your T's. But it's awesome because he gave me the confidence by bringing our two first employees on for my, I guess, side where I play a lot in, to bring in these absolute incredible, amazing people who I just love working with, and I just hope they, you know, continue to enjoy their journey with us, and which I'm so far so good, and they've taken our business to another level. Like Dave and I could not do that without them. So I think as leaders, we're just 24/7, phones always on. We're with them. We don't micromanage them. They run their own shows. We trust them with everything. And they are just the best at what they do. So we're very, very fortunate. So that's probably a sign of our leadership or how we want to be. And it's communication.
Do you think that you can teach that type or that style of leadership to others, or is something that is innate?
Yeah, I think there's different elements of leadership as well. Like some people don't necessarily, and that's fine, want to be out front and center and leading teams. But you can show leadership qualities by just what you do day in, day out. You know, as you said, whether you can teach it, yeah, I certainly got – I think the day you think you know everything, you might as well pack up and go home like that. I think you've got to be open to be learning every day, and we all make mistakes. And, yeah, we're very early in our piece of I guess, being leaders. But I think if you might have seen – I guess the enthusiasm or passion about my voice of our team is they're all leaders in their own right, which is great. And I can tell you now, both Dave and I are not threatened by anyone. They are generally better at what they do than what we do, so which is awesome. And that doesn't threaten me at all. I'm actually pumped and excited about that. So, and I love seeing their success, as I said. And I think if they can genuinely see that as well, you know, where you actually are, you know, present, or you are there to help their careers and what they want to do, and we give options, and we've gone through it with a few of our people already, in terms of if they want to step up and take a leadership role, build like a lot of our team. We want these individuals to build. Like they're so good at what they do as leaders, we want them to build their own teams around them, and that's one goes into our growth strategy. But we just absolutely trust them with everything. Yeah. So because of who they are and as people, but who they are in terms of what they do in their day to day professional life as well. So yeah, we're very, very fortunate.
Before we continue to chat about leadership and this. I wanted to ask you, how did you start a company and just decided to, you know, today you were like, okay, we're going to do it. how did that come about? Because you have been in the industry for a while, and then didn't you feel like scared by, you know, all the risks that there is? And you touch on the most scary one, that is, what if you don't bring work and then you can't feed the people that you're working with?
Yeah, no, big time. I'm still scared. but as I said, we try and take calculated risks. But yeah, I think honestly, lay our hand on heart, we did this based on Dave and I are pretty emotional dudes. So we work hard, but we love a good time, but we're very family orientated, very friends orientated, very people orientated. So I think for us, it was a natural progression. We both came from tier one land. We then worked for, family businesses. So maybe it was a natural progression. I don't know. We see an opportunity here in Southeast Queensland, a lot of work, especially in the infrastructure space. Probably, you know, that's been my whole life. My whole life is project pipeline. So sort of saw that opportunity. Yes, if it went sideways, we felt we would go and get a salary job again, because I guess resources are very constrained, as we all know, in our industry at the moment. But you know what, at 2 years in, I don't want to do that. I want this to succeed. I don't want us just to be your average run-of-the-mill business either. So we got lofty expectations. I don't mean that financially. I just meant, us as a business and what we want to achieve. So I think, yep, extremely scary. If it wasn't, everyone would be doing it. But it hasn't been rainbows and unicorns. We've had some serious challenges, but then I would say, based upon a percentage, it's been 80% awesome, 20% not. So if you keep that ratio, happy to keep rolling. But the best part about our job is our team. But then also, without making you blush, Lau, we get to pop up in all different companies. So, you know, I love my time with yourselves, but then we're on different projects, but then we're meeting, a ton of new people and learning so much. So I think, how did we start? I had no idea. I didn't even know what zero was, and now suddenly I'm invoicing and doing all sorts of crazy admin. So, that's not fun, but, cash flows, all this stuff. We've got so much to learn, because I guess one of the other pieces of advice was, don't work in the business, work on your business. But you can't do that, because we've got to generate revenue, because we've got to pay mortgages, we've got to put food on the table for our families, we've got to get our teams working. So but there'll come a day, hopefully, and we'll be able to work more on. But we're juggling that, and we've started our second business through opportunity. So we're very have a go mentality, and sink or swim. So.
It's a mindset.
Maybe you should do a follow up in a year's time, and hopefully this this email address still works. But we've got some awesome people around us in their own businesses and own rights. And Dave and I definitely don't have all the answers, and we lean on a lot of very smart, just good business orientated, just genuinely high performing, but also to very happy to see, us through our behaviors succeed, which is, we get support from a lot of people, which, we're very flattered by, which is great.
That's really nice. You speak really highly of everyone. And
don't start to cry,
Lau.
Don't cry.
Yeah, I'm about to. See what I have to deal with, Zahan.
He's just telling you like this.
when can you have a serious conversation with this man?
Yeah, life can't be too serious.
Josh, I'm interested. I'm intrigued. After everything that you said, there was something that you called yourself emotional dude. I think you said that.
And she just hung up on that and really needs a clarification.
And I want to know. No, I don't need a clarification. I want to know the pros and the cons of being an emotional dude in this industry.
Pro and con would be, we wear a heart on our sleeve. So what you see is what you get. Look, I went through, I think this was on, so I did my homework and I do a lot of driving. I listened to one of your podcasts. I can't think who spoke about it. It was about, I think it was just you two maybe, and it was about don't let your sort of your role or your job define you. And so I can honestly share with you with a story in very quick one. Through COVID, we were on a massive rail bid for Inland Rail, and I'll probably leave it to that, what that was. But anyway, COVID here, we're in a huge JV. We had people spread out everywhere. You're running, you know, you bid from teams. SharePoint was only new on the scene, all this sort of stuff, yada, yada, yada. But we had to really work hard to, you know, to one, get the submission done and on time, but then make sure we gave ourselves every opportunity to win. Point of that story is when you say you're an emotional dude, I found any time I was talking to friends or family during that period and you weren't really seeing them, my whole happiness was based on whether we won this or not. And at the end of the day, learning, yeah, fortunate enough we did win, but like that didn't define me. Yeah, we partied and hugged and went to some fancy restaurant and probably went too long over 3 days. But anyway, once we got over that part and the exciting part, you know, you're back to, oh, okay, well, what's next? You know, what can we win? Or straight into delivery or whatever. So I did, it was a learning curve there. That shouldn't have been, because if we lost, what was I going to do, right? So it was, you know, kicking stones or, and we're in the game of literally, you'll lose more than you win. And that's just life, and it's so cutthroat what we do in tenders. And you know, I worked on one for 2 years recently, and I'm still in counselling because we lost on pure on price. So that's if someone wants to go down that path, then they do. So
we're still in counselling.
Yeah, I'll be sending a particular client my invoice for counselling. But no, you know what I mean. Like, and that's all tongue in cheek, but you learn from it, right? So I think. You know, that's why what really resonated with me, what you guys were talking about, and hopefully along that line, you can't fall into that trap. And that probably came down to, you know, what's an emotional dude? And Dave's very similar. So I think both playing sport from a very young age, team sport, you want to win, right? And you want to win at all costs and do everything to win. And we mainly want to win as a team. Like I never played golf or tennis or anything like that. I love just winning because then you can go celebrate with your team and it was exciting, right? So that's all we were sort of driven by there. So I think with us, yeah, that can be a pro, definitely, but definitely can be a con too if you're in terms of being quite from that emotional aspect. I think but it shows you care as well. You just got to be able to control. And I think, yeah, definitely that taught me a lot. So over the last 3 years, I'm a bit different. And when I mean emotional too, as I said, I just, yeah, you'll know, I guess I did a couple of, we had a few consultants come in late to attend and bringing them onto the team. And I'd read them the story, every single one of them, of what we'd been doing for the last 12 months and quite passionate about it. And that might fall more into that social delivery and, you know, how can we optimize local Indigenous engagement? How can we get more women into our industry? How can we get military veterans involved? How can we get a better education programs, all that sort of side? So you'll see that sort of emotion come out because passionate. So,
yeah. I'm intrigued. What does that passion for diversity and inclusion, and when I say a very holistic approach that you have come from, there a specific
sport.
Event in your life?
Yeah, sport.
Okay.
So I don't understand. Like I'm a big believer on capability. So for me, I struggle where there is all this division and I realize that's the world. But yeah, sport, because I grew up playing sport with Indigenous kids, you know, Islanders, Australians, English, South Africans, all that. And I just saw them as my teammate. And so when I see even, I guess this division or you know, pay equality and all that, I'm like, well, if you're the best for the project, it doesn't matter who you are, or what you are, what you believe in, or male, female, whatever, like why aren't you rewarded or you're engaged to do that particular role? So, And look, maybe that'll happen one day, but I don't know. But I just don't operate like that. And I think for me, team sport was the absolute leveler and equalizer, and from the age of four. So I don't know any different.
Yeah. Wow. That is amazing, because I feel like this passion that you have is going to bleed onto Andy.
This is why you shouldn't drink before midday, Leah.
Comedian, also.
I hope you're on holidays.
I think that when you have those values and you are very set in stone on them, you transfer that into your team. And that's why I think we both were having this conversation, and we were saying that, you know, if you have a leader on top that doesn't really believe in all of this and it's probably just doing the bare minimum, then there's not going to be change. So we hope that people start understanding the importance and action all of these initiatives that we come up with for everyone. It's so much better to have a diverse team.
Yeah, and everyone brings different skills, different ways of looking at, different challenges or solutions. And yeah, I think I agree with you. So having that full integration is, hopefully that happens sooner rather than later. But anyway, maybe there's some industries
like
out there.
From the front. No, but it's good. And I think, just having people like you that have, you know, been able to take the push and get into a leadership place and been like, this is what we think should be done and we're going to be doing it, rather than, you know, waiting for someone else to learn from you and hopefully pick it up. Hopefully more people like that, you know, will end up to a change in scenery in this kind of monopoly that we have going on.
Interesting name that you gave it. Yeah. Josh, we are really thankful that you join us today and share a little bit of your journey. Obviously, we want to ask you more questions and more about Landly, but we can always have you again joining us to just solely like talk about that. Thank you so much for sharing all of your stories and your background, and for inspiring us to be better leaders as well, and for giving us the responsibility, I guess, or I don't know, the power actually, for giving us the power to, you know, be leaders just from the position that we have, from the individual level. That's what I mean.
And also for listening to the podcast in general.
Oh, yes. You opened up this podcast episode saying that you're like the biggest fan, and I thought you were just saying that. But you have listened to the episodes. That is so beautiful.
Well, I just wanted you to probably give me some free collateral, like marketing. You got some shirts or something, or hats, or what? I don't know what you're rocking for next year, but happy to parade that around on the Gold Coast for you. So, it'll be good. But no, congratulations to you both. This is an awesome podcast, some really valuable discussions and that. Sorry, you probably lose all your ratings on mine today, but there's only way that's up for this year. You both should be fully commended and congratulated, and I know you're doing some good things in the industry anyway, and Lau's won, you know, more awards, and I think she won an Oscar last week for some moves she put out, but well, congrats on that too. So I hope you just keep speaking to us even when you make it big in Hollywood. So congrats
exactly,
on that too.
Exactly.
So, so make sure you just ask for more money off your employer. So
to share it with you.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Right. Yeah. Don't forget me and Sahan, all right? So we'll be good.
No, thank you so much. Thank you
for having me, and